This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
When you think about what the ocean sounds like, what does your brain conjure up? Maybe the gentle ebbing and flowing of tides. Maybe you think about marine life, perhaps the songs of whales or that clicking sound dolphins make. But what about the snapping of air bubbles created by thousands of shrimp in tide pools? What about the ambient noise of both the shallow and deep parts of the ocean? Have you ever considered those? And more importantly, have you ever considered that what the ocean sounds like can have an impact on everything from conservation to energy to video games? Dr. Heather Spence is the living embodiment of every 90s kid's dream of growing up to become a marine biologist. But unlike most 90s kids, she didn't get there by dreaming of swimming with dolphins. She got there through sound. Dr. Spence is a cellist who became fascinated with the concept of sound in college, and that fascination led her all the way to the depths of the ocean. Now, her research is in a curious field called marine bioacoustics, and her work is used both by the Department of Energy and video game developers. And lately, she's even studying whether the ocean has a memory and how we can access it. We sat down for a conversation spanning the blue depths that make up the majority of our planet's surface. Here's Dr. Spence. Heather Spence, welcome to Head on Fire. Thank you so much for being here.
Very glad to be here.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited to speak with you because you are living every 90s kid's dream. I don't know where this came from, but I feel like at some point in the like mid-90s, somehow every kid everywhere decided that their single dream in life was to be a marine biologist. I don't know where that came from. Maybe you do. But you went on to become one.
Yeah. I mean, it is possible. We're not like a mythical beast. It actually is doable, despite what your like guidance counselor will tell you.
How did you get into that field? Where did that dream come from? Tell people what it is that you do.
Well, like obviously, to become a marine biologist, the very obvious and direct path that I took was to become a musician because that's what you do.
Sure.
But yeah. So yeah, it actually was sound and music that got me into marine biology. So I was fascinated by sound and music, and I just wanted to understand, how does sound work? Like, why does music make me feel a certain way and other music makes me feel a different way? And I, you know, trying to sort all of that out and, you know, learn to play instruments and all of that good stuff. And then it's like, well, what am I going to do in college? And so, I mean, obviously I was going to do music, right? So I went to college on a music scholarship, but the music scholarship did not require me to major in music. And so I was able to explore the scientific side of sound. And that led me to realize that sound underwater is this really hugely important part of ecosystems underwater, because sound actually travels faster underwater than it does in air. And so, yeah. And so it's this hugely important thing for marine ecosystems. And I was like, oh, I like sound. I like beaches and the ocean. Obviously, marine biology is the place for me.
I have so many questions, which is convenient because we're on a podcast right now.
Great.
Can we just go back to the part where you said that sound travels faster underwater than through air? I mean, I would think, why?
Okay, so here's the thing, right? When you think about sound, sound is a, you think about sound, you most people kind of sound is a vibration.
Uh-huh.
And so it is a physical phenomenon. And so, uh-huh. But sound isn't like an object that goes flying through the air and like comes from my mouth and hits your ear. But there is a pressure wave that travels. Individual particles are not traveling, but the pressure change is traveling. Well, mm-hmm. pressure of what? And so it has to travel through something. So, you know, people may have heard like sound doesn't travel through a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because sound has to travel through something. So it can travel through right. air, it can travel through water, it can travel through a table. And so the little particles are jiggling. And so if the particles are denser, closer together, then that facilitates the movement of the sound wave.
Fascinating. That is so fascinating. So I'm so curious, you know, about this little lovely chain of events that led you like to going and getting your entire PhD, like master's,
so much
PhD,
school, so much school.
Like so much schooling over. I'm a musician and I'm curious about how sound works.
Yeah. It's not a career path for everyone, but when you're really curious to know about something, you just kind of keep going. Even if people look at you like you're crazy. I mean, to me, you know, I am a marine biologist and a musician, and I don't really think of those. I don't really think that I have like different parts of myself. It's all kind of about like,
sure.
I want to understand, right? I want
yeah,
to understand,
yeah, yeah.
I want to protect, I want to share with other
that.
People. So, but there does come a practical point too. So, you know, I had to figure out what I was going to do. And I could have gone and like, you, basically school makes you decide on one thing. So I tried to do it all. I was like, I'm going to do a mashup. I'm going to do a mashup thing where I'm going to create my own major, and it's going to be in acoustic biophysics, and it's going to bring together the biology department and the physics department and the speech and hearing department and the music department, and it's going to be amazing. And then like I when I got everybody to kind of agree on what the coursework would be, I was going to be there for like 7 or 8 years. I'm like, this does not make
and
sense.
And you said, yes, also, here is my credit card. Never never bill me, please, because I will not have money.
Yeah, it's like, oh, and then like, and then what grad school is going to understand like what that degree is?
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so there's like, so working within the confines of what education allows you to do, they kind of make you pick one. And so I did. So I was like, okay, well, do I do music with a side of science or science with a side of music? I was like, practically speaking, like probably makes more practical sense to do science with a side of music. So I did that. But you could do it the other way. And so I just kept, you know, combining things the whole way through. I mean, my doctoral research was about noise in dolphin habitats. So, you know, you can do like a, you know, pretty holistic things if you just kind of figure out how to work the system.
So I think when people think of, I'm a marine biologist, I think people are thinking of basically a water veterinarian. Like,
yes.
I take care of dolphins when they're mm-hmm. sick. But you're into marine bioacoustics. Did I get that right?
Yeah. And
so I'm so interested in the idea that what you do is listen to the ocean. So what are we learning about the ocean by listening to it? And yeah. Also, just for fun, could you be a water veterinarian?
You totally like, can. I have friends who do that. I have friends who do that. But like honestly, like
how many sick dolphins have you taken care of?
I've helped other people take care of sick dolphins. Does that count?
Do you play the cello to the sick dolphins?
I
does this
oddly,
help? Is this helping?
I oddly have not done that yet, although it is on my list of things to do. Yeah, that seems like a major oversight in what I've done so far. So I'll be sure,
music
I'll be
therapy
quick,
for
quick
dolphins.
To rectify that. Yeah, I mean that is okay. So there's a lot of different things you can do in marine biology, which I think people may not realize. And I think it's not a very well understood field, because you take something like, okay, you want to be a doctor, right? Well, you know the path to becoming a doctor. You mm-hmm. go to school for a really long time and you study like people and health, and you do your residency and you do these things, and then you become a doctor. Okay, well, you want to be a lawyer, like you do your thing, you're like pre-law, you do law school, and then you take some tests and you're a lawyer. Marine biologist does not work that way. Most, like I would say almost all of the marine biologists that I know or know about do not have the job title marine biologist. And that's something I think a lot of people just don't even think about, because when people mm-hmm. are telling, you know, people might want to be a marine biologist, they get some mentorship, they're like, hey, I want to be a marine biologist. Well, you know, the most common feedback I hear on that is like, well, it's a very competitive field. Are you sure you want to do that, honey? Why don't you go do something a little more practical, like finance?
Which what you're really saying is, there's no money here.
Yeah.
Turn back. There is no money here.
That's the other thing, right? They're like, it's competitive. It's really hard work and you're going to hate it. It's not all fun and dolphins.
I have a very dear friend who... I have a very dear friend who is absolutely going to listen to this episode. She does what you do, but for rocks. She's a geologist and geophysicist and does a lot of like listening to volcanoes. I think, listen, Kathleen, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I'm misrepresenting what it is that you do, but it's very complicated and it involves a lot of math I don't understand. But it's so interesting, because when she talks about the field, it's like, oh, it's incredibly expensive to get into. And you're going to make absolutely nothing. And there's going to be, you know, 7,000 people competing for one spot, and you have to pay to publish, and mm-hmm. it's hell, but also I love it and I wouldn't do anything else.
Yeah. I think that's maybe welcome to like science academia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, on that, like, slightly... we could go in a whole thing here about paying to publish and science and... Okay, but putting that on hold.
Yeah, so I'm curious, like, what is it that we're learning about the ocean by listening to it?
Yes. So as noted, right, so sound is really important to marine ecosystems. Well, sound's really important to marine ecosystems. Let's think about terrestrial ecosystems, right? Mm-hmm. Sound's already really important to terrestrial ecosystems. So think about all of the things that we can understand about the world around us just by listening to it. Think about different times of day and how they sound really different. And so probably if I played you a sound from your neighborhood from the morning or from like midnight or like afternoon or dusk, you'd probably be able to tell like what time of day it was. Just by listening to it.
I never thought about the idea that I could know what time it is by listening to it.
Bird song, like the crickets, the...
Sure. That's incredible.
Owls, whatever you got at night. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I live in the middle of a bunch of cornfields. If I hear owls, I'm going to hear...
You're like a little concerned.
Yes, maybe. Something somewhere is about to die.
Okay, so the next thing may not be totally relevant for cornfields, but also you could, you know, traffic patterns, right? You know, so okay. The noises of
if
humans
I hear traffic,
doing
I know
their...
I'm on my way to work.
Yeah, right? So you got your like daily like activities of the humans, mm-hmm. which might be different on a weekday than a weekend.
Sure.
Right? And so you might hear people, like if you hear people like yelling at each other, you might want to... You know,
run.
Be a little careful about what's going on over there. Yeah, if you hear gunshots, like really, like get down. You know, if you hear, you know, let's say you're even walking down a hallway and maybe there's an open door and you walk past a room, you could tell like, is that, you know, are there like happy sounds going on there? Like people cool, like chilling out? Is it like some classroom? Is it, you know, clinking and clattering and chatter of like people having lunch? There's a lot of things that we can tell from hearing that we aren't really necessarily focused on, but we really get a lot of information that way. And I will point out that when we go to sleep, we close our eyes, but our ears are still open, right? So sound cues are pretty important to us. Take that underwater, you get all of that information, and yet you have a lot of creatures where sound is a more central way that they're finding out about the world than they are getting from vision. And that makes sense because underwater, like, visibility can be not that great, but sound works,
you know,
pretty
well. That actually brings to mind, and I know this is a bit morbid, but that brings to mind that the billionaire submersible.
Oh yeah.
The pay to dive mm-hmm. submersible, that sound played a big role in that, finding the wreckage of that.
Yeah. Sound is a big part of our national security, right? I mean, think about the Navy and their interest in sound. Actually, it was really interesting to me. So the first thing that really got me to realize that marine biology is where it's at was discovering this creature called the snapping shrimp. It's super cute. This little guy is the size of your pinky finger, and they have a big claw and a little claw. And the big claw, they snap shut, and it creates a vacuum bubble in the liquid. And when it pops, it makes this big popping sound. I know, it's a little shrimp, very, very advanced. And so collectively, these shrimp all together in shallow waters worldwide, they make some of the loudest sounds underwater. It's little tiny
really?
Shrimp. Yeah. And the Navy's been interested in it because this loud sound of snapping shrimp snapping can actually mask the sounds of submarines. And so like,
what do we know why they're making this sound? Is it like a defense mechanism? Do they stun prey with it or something? Or
yeah, so there's, I mean, as with any invertebrate, we don't really understand them all that well, even though they are incredibly important to, you know, ecosystems and apparently national security. But we think that there is a stunning prey element, right? So it's making this big explosive bubble. So we think that that's part of it. We think that territorial disputes, kind of like defense against each other, is a thing. We think that communication is a part of it. Nobody's decoded shrimp speak yet, but we should. Because I bet it would be pretty interesting.
Get on that. What are you doing? You got nothing going on. Just go decode shrimp speak.
I actually started trying to do that, but it was it was actually too complicated. I mean,
she's got her notebook.
One
click for yes, two clicks for no.
Well,
snaps.
So I got started, like, this is audio is so complicated. So this was like this was a little while ago, when I was starting my undergraduate journey and trying to decode shrimp language.
5 years ago. It's fine.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll go with that. But, you know, I actually did, so it's like, okay, put the shrimp and you like dangle the underwater microphone over it and you record the snaps. But the problem I found, and I didn't, you know, I was doing an undergraduate research project, not, you know, an entire PhD thesis, was that there was a lot of individual variation in the snaps, because I was hoping to find, like, well, at least, like, maybe there's some differences in the way, like, one species snaps or another species snaps, mm-hmm. right? Like, that would be a good place to start. Yeah, like, there was so much, the snaps were all really different from each other. So I was like, okay, well, I guess
so they're almost like a person's voice, like they're unique to the shrimp?
Probably, but like, but each snap was
That's
different.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah. Just think about what we don't know that's going on.
So that's actually what I wanted to ask you, because it's often said that we know more about the stars above us than the ocean below us. And I was wondering, one, is that true? And in your opinion, because so much of your work involves conservation, should that continue to be true?
So... yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. He's like, fund more ocean research. My donation button is open. Yeah. So, I mean, one thing I will say is, like, we don't know what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a lot about the ocean that we don't even know that we don't know it, because we're just not even thinking in ocean terms. Like, we don't even know how to, like, even we're thinking in our human terrestrial terms. And then we think about, like, how that applies to the ocean, but we're not even, like, you know, we're not even thinking about what questions we're not even thinking to ask about the ocean. So it's hard to even compare it with outer space, because, like, here it is on our own planet and we're so totally tied in with the ocean. See what I did there? and you know, and reliant upon the ocean and arguably a part of it, and we just don't even we barely know anything. But I will say, you know, I think there are some things that we do know, and we do know, you know, something about like layers of the oceans. We know something about life in the ocean. We, you know, we're trying, and we know we can do some things. Like, this is why baseline research is so important, is that you need to have that long-term monitoring so that we can start to track and see like when changes happen, or if, you know, humans do something epically disruptive, you know, what are the impacts of that? Because you've got to have that before, till you have the before and after. But unfortunately, what often happens in science funding is after the big, epic, terrible thing happens, then people want to fund the research, right? But I want, but it's like, can't we fund the research before the bad thing happens? And then we can have such a better idea. How will we ever know what the real impact was if we don't have the before data?
I talked to Sam Montano, who does, she's a doctorate of emergency management. She wrote a book called Disasterology and talks about emergency management and preparedness and all that. And this is a very similar argument to what she talks about. After a tragedy, after a natural disaster, mm-hmm. after something like that, suddenly there's money, suddenly there's interest, suddenly there's manpower. But the problem is, and I was just thinking about this today in relation, you know, not to harsh the mood or anything, but we just had yet another mass shooting here in the United States yesterday, and another school shooting. And so many people want to suddenly do preparedness like after that.
Yeah.
And then, and by that, I mean, I don't know, suddenly there's more, there's more checks happening at doors. Suddenly there's more patrols. Suddenly there's more stuff happening at, but that is also always reactive. We are always reacting to mm-hmm. tragedy rather than proactively practicing prevention. And yes. What I'm learning from talking to people like you, to like Dr. Montano, like my friend Kathleen, is that like the only way that we're ever really going to prevent the next horrible disaster or find the next cure to something or find the next, you know, whatever, is being proactive in this research and funding it before it becomes a tragedy.
Yes. Yes. So are you listening, funders?
I hope so. I'm trying.
Like, we need this.
So, you know, you do work in conservation, and we are kind of in a more serious moment right now. What, this sounds so doom and gloom, but what peril awaits humanity if we do jump into the ocean and just decide to take and take and take and take? Like, how do oceans contribute to our current and continued existence?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you framed it that way, because I think one of the common framings is like, well, you know, humans are the problem. Well, my issue with that framing is that, you know, I think, like, at least me as a human, like, I'd like to continue to exist. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like humans. And so if we are imagining a future where humans are thriving and living, you know, harmoniously with nature, to me, like, that's a future we want to aim for. Mm-hmm. You know, things, you know, with rapid change, there could be things that could be pretty bad for humans that might not be so bad for other species. And ecosystems can adapt and change. But I think at some point you kind of have to take a step back and go, what is the future that we want? Mm-hmm. And how do we try to get there? And I think that is the thing that we need to rally around and not do so much of this, well, humans are the problem, bad humans. You know, humans should have, I hear this, you know, humans should have no impact. Of course we're having an impact. We are not actors upon nature. We are actors within nature. We are part of nature. And so when we change the way we're thinking about it, I think that helps us to frame what do we do next. Because we need to do a lot more like visioning around, okay, what's the future that we want? And this, and in the acoustic space, you know, I asked this question, like, what is going to be the soundscape of the future? What do we want our future soundscape to sound like?
Hmm.
And when we start thinking that way, you know, I think we could have some of the answers. We can find those answers. We can work together and find those answers and make a plan to get there. But not if we keep like people who should be on the same side just attacking each other, like, no, nah! Like, you know, we kind of need to collaborate on this one. More collaboration, less, you know, telling each other that they're, you know, people are doing it the wrong way. And
is there a branch of current conservation or branch of current ocean science, ocean research, ocean discovery that is giving you hope about next steps? Is there anything, any promising research that maybe the best next step in your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, so I think citizen science is a great area because the way that we're approaching our work with acoustic monitoring is also, you know, it's very community involved, and so that includes resource managers as well as other community members. And I think that when you get people whose resource it is, you're realizing like, okay, I feel some ownership and responsibility here, and I'm involved in the solution. One, that helps improve morale, and two, it gets you know more people working on the data analysis and collection, which is needed, and three, then you get everybody kind of pulling together in the same direction. And so I think community-based conservation is really important for the future. There are some other areas that are important too. I mean, there's a Earth optimism movement. I think when people feel, one of the things I identified really early on in my work in Cancun, which has massive tourism, is that you gotta be sensitive to the fact that it can be really, really depressing for people who are working in a particular area and seeing the degradation happen. And that can lead to a feeling of like total like helplessness and hopelessness. But you can't lose the hope, because once you get to that point, then you could be like, oh, what's the use? No, there is still a use. Maybe it's not exactly the way you'd want it, but it's still, you can do something, you know? So, you know, one person has the power to do something. So that's another angle.
Something that's giving a lot of people hope, and this is the tech sector, Washington, you know, politicians, casual folks like me that just, you know, spend a lot of time on social media, is renewable energy. Mm-hmm. We're in a point where we see everything from failing power grids because of extreme temperatures. You know, Texas has gone through stuff like that. Several southern states are going through that right now because of, you know, extreme heat is causing a toll on the power grid. But in the winter, the same thing happens up here in, in Chicagoland, and you know, the power grid isn't great either. You know, but we're also seeing that in transportation and all sorts of new ways. So let's talk renewable energy. Mm-hmm. What is it? What is the work that you do in the renewable energy field? How is ocean science contributing to that?
Yeah. So, just to give context, I participate in a really wonderful program. It's the AAAS, that's American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS Science and Technology Policy Fellowship. And so,
well, that's
this
not
is,
a mouthful or anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but this fellowship places PhD scientists in federal government. And so coming into there, I mean, I into that program, you know, I wasn't sure where I was going to land, you know, in terms of what agency. And I hadn't really imagined that it was going to be the Department of Energy. And because, you know, when you think about the federal government, obviously, when you think ocean, the first thing you think of is the Department of Energy. Mm. Not really. But mm-hmm. actually, there's some really fascinating work going on in the ocean space at the Department of Energy. So I work with the Water Power Technologies Office, And this office is super cool. It has two main parts to it, hydropower and marine energy. And marine energy includes energy from waves, tides, currents, and gradients, like thermal gradients and salinity gradients. And so when you think about the ocean, you know, the ocean is constantly moving, right? And like, what if we could harness that for energy needs? There's so much potential there. So yeah, so it's a pretty exciting space to be in, because there's a lot of innovation happening in that space, because it's pretty early stage. And so just amazing innovations happening with what we could do with power from the ocean.
Is there any current implementation of that anywhere?
Yeah, so there are there's plenty of demonstration projects. So it's you know, here in the US we're, you know, working towards commercialization, but it's not really right now. But there's a lot of really interesting work being done. And part of what I'm really excited about is the potential for, could we power ocean observing, like ocean science, with ocean energy? So if you can imagine, like, you know, right now we're basically, in order to understand the ocean, we're putting devices out there, and either you're dangling it off of a ship, which that's pretty like resource intensive,
sure.
Or you're, you know, throwing it out there and you've got a bunch of batteries, or you're cabled
to
shore.
Which is probably not great.
Yeah, I mean, okay, you know, or you're cabled to shore, and then you're kind of limited where you can put it. You know, but what if you could have something that you could put out there and it could power itself? And so you could leave it out for a really long time. It could just power itself, you know, and generate its own power right where it is. I mean, that would be amazing. I think that would be transformative for ocean science, mm-hmm. if we could do that. And so, you know, there's some real interesting implications for what we could do with marine energy that are pretty exciting.
I was really intrigued because something else you're involved, my gosh, you wear a million hats, but one of them is a subject that I am really tied to the idea more in an artistic fashion. And actually, when I first saw this website of yours, it immediately reminded me of a poem, but the Ocean Memory Project. Mm-hmm. One, yeah. Does the ocean have a memory? And two, how do we find out what it is? And what does it know?
Yes, great questions. So one, does ocean have a memory? So at Ocean Memory Project, we think yes. And
fascinating and scary.
Yes. Yeah. It really, by mashing together these concepts of ocean, the concept of ocean, the concept of memory, it's so thought-provoking. And I love the discussions that it generates and the questions that it generates. It's just a different lens to take on like what's going on with ourselves and the ocean. What I would say about the Ocean Memory Project is that I wouldn't say that there's one definitive definition of what ocean memory is. Mm-hmm. And that is because, you know, I kind of like that, you know, each person who encounters this idea of ocean memory has a different take on it. Almost everyone was like, oh yeah, ocean memory, that makes complete sense. And I know what that is. And it's this thing. And it might be totally different from what the next person thinks. And so really Ocean Memory Project is about a community of people from a whole wide variety of disciplines and, you know, ways of thinking about things coming together and asking new questions. And maybe scary. I would say like humbling, maybe, you know, awe-inspiring, because one thing that we do with Ocean Memory that might make some scientists squirm a little bit, but we're okay with it in Ocean Memory Project, is that the idea that, okay, where are the memories held? Okay. And you might think that they're held, I mean, it's okay, but think about them held in organisms. All right. You might think about them held across generations in organisms or in populations, But what if there were memory in a parcel of water? Yeah. It just, it starts to bring up, and then you have to kind of change the way you're even thinking about what memory is and what water is and what the ocean is. And it just, yeah.
But what does that mean to have memory in a parcel of water? Like, is it a moment in time somehow captured in a single draw? Like, what does that mean? I love that from an artist's mind,
yeah.
But from a science perspective, I'm like, okay, but what is the memory? Like, is it because in human mind, in human memory is something like an act of imagination. We don't actually correct me if I'm wrong. You're the actual PhD here from talking to other experts and doing my own research into things. We don't actually remember things like what people think we do, where we look at something and it just gets filed away into some little space in our memory bank somewhere. We don't actually like hear something and file it away in some little section of our memory bank somewhere. When we recall things, it is the part of our brain that daydreams. It's the part of our brain that makes things up. It's an act of imagination. And
yes.
Somehow we are reimagining our past because we don't file things away like a computer does and able to have perfect recall, which is why, and I know some of this from undergrad whenever I was getting my criminal justice degree, because when you're talking about like witness statements and why those are imperfect and the fallibility of memory once we get into the period of time after the event occurred and the more and more fallible that memory is, even if there are a large number of people that were present and all claim to agree to the same number of events, that agreement separates out and then can kind of coalesce if people talk to each other. But anyways, but all of that is a story that we're telling ourselves, and we retell the story to ourselves, which is why one of the many reasons why we forget some things, because we stop telling that story to ourselves. So all of that said, I'm not the expert here. What does it mean for a parcel of water to have a memory? Because a parcel of water doesn't have an imagination.
Yeah, well, I think you've gotten to the heart of the matter exactly with the brain of the matter exactly. Anyway,
sure.
with the recall aspect. And so, you know, it's like, okay, well, what's the difference between memory and say history, right?
Yeah.
And so as you say, like, right, okay, and so yeah, you know, we aren't just taking a complete recording capture of what's happening, storing it away, and then we can bring it up and re-experience it all over again, right? Like we're taking certain parts, and then when we recall it, right, there's something to be recalled, but it may be slightly different. And so if you wanted to take a scientific angle on the parcel of water thing, all right, and I don't want to say I speak for all of the scientific angles, but like one might be a parcel of water, right, may have experienced different environmental conditions, right? And so then that raises the question, is there anything about those environmental conditions that it experienced that could be recalled, right? So past conditions, could those conditions be recalled and you know, reassessed now that it experienced before? You know, it could be mid-ocean stuff, you know, temperature, salinity. It could be, you know, changes in depth. You know, and so you could think about, like, if you want to take it very literally, you could think about the composition of that particle of water. If that parcel of water, you know, if that parcel of water traveled through some area, right, that had traces of certain minerals, or maybe an animal passed through and there's some eDNA or whatever, right, it might have, you know, a memory of that whale or the conditions of that previous place, even in a new place.
That is fascinating. So what do we do with that? Or I guess I'm always thinking, I mean, I guess that's the effed up thing about our brains and the way that we're programmed, right? You know a thing exists, or you start realizing that a thing might exist, and immediately you start thinking of implementation. Oh, well, what do we do with this knowledge? I don't know. You just know it. But like, I guess maybe the better question is like, what is the purpose of the what are we hoping to get out of the research?
I think that the purpose of one purpose of Ocean Memory Project and framing, you know, the discussion this way, I think, is to identify the questions that are critical to our understanding of ourselves and the environment that aren't being asked or explored currently. And so to me, that's the exciting part. It's like, what new questions should we be asking? And then importantly, making sure that there's a wide range of perspectives involved in exploring that question. And so this is where I think we kind of know that the intersections of disciplines is where a lot of innovation can happen. And I think this, you know, at the intersection of the concepts of ocean and memory, and at the intersections of the different types of people who are coming together to explore that, I think that's an area that's like very rich and like ready to make some get some real new insight. And so that's what I think. It's like, how do we get a whole new perspective on things? Well, we need to explore those intersections. The intersections, I think, are really where we're going to find surprising discoveries that we didn't even know we were looking for. And so that's why it's hard to say, like, okay, we're not setting out to find one particular thing. We're setting out to find out what's there for us to find.
That is, we are literally just kind of going into the great blue beyond and find just to see what's there. That's so cool. That is so cool. You're so cool. Okay, so far in this conversation,
can I have that in
writing? Yes. Yes. I will tell 600,000 people that you are so freaking cool. Okay.
Amazing.
So far, your work has intersected with music, renewable energy, sound, recording sounds. We have talked about conservation, video games.
Oh, yeah.
Your work also intersects with the world of video games. How do you have the time, Heather Spence? How do you have the time? But two, what do you, are you just like providing sounds for video game? Like what is the work with the video games? I'm so confused.
Okay, yeah. So you've like looked me up.
Yes.
I do have a lot of hats and things that I do, but again, it's all labeling, right? Because for me, it's all the same stuff.
When people see, like, because I write fiction, I write nonfiction, I write poetry, I do this, I do like deep dive investigative nonfiction work that takes me years and years and years of research and hundreds of hours of interviews and stuff to come up with. Like, I've been writing the same book for the last several years. Like, and, you know, when I tell people what I do, but I also run a horse ranch and I do all this other stuff. Like, I get the, but in my head, it's all the same thing.
It's all the same thing.
So I
get it. It's all the same thing. Yeah.
But I just want to know how you got into video games.
Yeah. So, okay. So one, I love all types of games. I think it's this really interesting, like, especially like way of like, interacting with other people, right? Or, you know, either you're interacting with people playing the game or you're interacting with people because you've designed something that they're going to then experience, right? And so games are just something that kind of fascinate me. And so I've done a variety of things. One notable thing is that I spent some time, actually, cool. Okay, we mentioned before, like, most marine biologists do not have the job title marine biologist, and I've had a lot of different job titles, but coolest job title I've ever had was actually dolphin whisperer, which was my actual, like, on the contract job title when I was working for a video games company. And so in that, I was basically working with them to figure out how to do an educational marine biology based game. And I with mixed results. I mean, I think, you know, thinking about that project, you know, yeah, it was good and all, but I would really like to see more understanding in the games industry that things can be educational and fun, and you don't have to sacrifice on either side. And And so that is a source of frustration for me, is that I really think that we could do better, right? Really, being inspired by science research, like, that could be super fun and interesting, because it'll come up with things like you wouldn't even think to do otherwise. Like, it could really, like, inspire some really neat stuff for people to experience. So, yeah, there's room. I'd say there's room for more of that.
So, bringing the moment full circle, I know that you have been able to kind of find a happy medium, a place where your scientific side and your musical side have melded into one. You have this phenomenal new music project that you've been able to do. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I love listening to underwater sounds and interpreting them. But one of the ways that I have that I try to seek to understand and interpret underwater sounds is actually jamming with them. And so it's maybe not like the process you would normally think about for a composer. You know, you tend to think about, like, well, I'm going to plan out, I know I'm going to be writing it for, like, you know, this group of musicians, or I'm going to be, you know, I have in mind, like, this genre of music I'm going to be writing to, and it's going to be this long, and it's going to have, you know, this type of structure. But I really try to listen to, you know, for me, it's more of a process like a group improvisation. So I'm really listening to what's happening with the sounds, and then I'm responding emotionally to those sounds, and kind of, you know, I feel like it's kind of a more of a improvisational duet. I have a lot of different music projects, but most recently I released an album called Whale Hello There, and it's all underwater sound based. So every song is featuring and fully inspired by underwater soundscapes. And so for each song, I didn't set out, oh, I know exactly how I'm going to make this song. It was the sounds that kind of, you know, did their thing that caused me to do my thing. Then they did their thing and caused me. And so it kind of evolved into this creature that became.
Okay. But how long have you been holding on to the title Gulls Just Want to Have Fun?
I nearly changed that one. I was like, is this
so
too?
I am notoriously a hater of puns. I know I am not fun at parties. I kind of hate puns. They make me irrationally angry. But I love your album. I listened to it this morning.
Aww.
And I just have to say, the number of it's just like, oh, you have a notes app somewhere where you put ocean-related puns, and then you make songs that you can relate back to the puns. How long have you been holding on to some of these?
No, like, a lot of those were just, like, those were, like, kind of, like, they were, just, again, like, I actually didn't think too hard about a lot of the names. It was just like, oh, well, like, clearly, like, this is the name of it. I was like, I'll change that later, right? Like, I was like, okay, like, that is too, like, okay, that's too much. I'll change it later. Then I was like,
oh, no, it's exactly the correct amount of much. This is the exact correct amount of muchness, like 100%. Yeah, yeah, it's the correct amount of muchness. I do very much love it. I want to, you know, we are coming up on your time, and I want to be respectful of it. I do have a couple of questions. I do want to come back to the realm of sound and the ocean. Do you have a favorite ocean sound? Is there a specific place? Like, I know that you told me to think of, like, different times of day. Is there a specific place that sounds the best to you, or that you found the most interesting?
I mean, I gotta hand it to the snapping shrimp. Their sound is so interesting, because it sort of sounds like static, but it's not static. It's like, this is life creating this, like, crackling sound, and it really is the characteristic sound of a coral reef. And coral reefs are just pretty cool. places. So yeah, I gotta go with the Staffing Shrimp Crackles.
Are you somebody, so the book I've been researching is a book about death, and I know that one of the ways that we can make use of our body after we're done making use of our body is turning it into a coral reef. Is that something that you have considered for yourself?
I mean, I don't know how I feel about the fish that I've been eavesdropping on then like nibbling at me, so I don't know.
Yeah,
like, come back to me on that one.
There's cremation, but then there's like hydro cremation or hydrolysis or something like that, where you like get melted and turned into a coral reef, and you could be go be a coral reef, which is neat. I too feel weird about fish making a home out of my bones after I'm done using them, but I don't know. This could be fun. I know that we love the snapping shrimp, but is that your favorite ocean animal sound as well?
You know, it's hard to say favorites.
What if the dolphins hear me, they're gonna come and tail slap me
or something.
Oh, are dolphins actually evil?
Kinda.
I've heard that we have everybody fucked up. Like, the dolphins are actually evil. The whales are cool. Like, what's the tea? Like, who in the ocean is evil and who are our friends?
I mean,
like, sharks are cool and dolphins are the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, I would be a little cautious of any of those guys, but I would make sure you stay on a dolphin's good side. put it that way. Like, they, yeah. Yeah.
As a lady of the ocean, are you pro whales destroying yachts?
No, because like, come on, whales. Talk it out, whales. All right.
Talk it out with the yachts. With the billionaire, yeah.
Yeah, it's like fighting is not the answer. Let's all just come together and have a little mediation and we'll work this thing out.
Sure. Okay, so we've seen loads of movies featuring supposed marine biologists. We've seen The Meg, we've seen Flipper, I've seen The Shape of Water. There's all points in between. There's horror movies, there's action movies, there's disaster movies, there's all sorts of stuff. Is there a movie out there that gets the job more or less right?
So I did recently watch Avatar: The Way of Water, and I wouldn't say that it gets it right per se, because there were things in there I'm like, oh come on, that was a missed opportunity. But you know, it was interesting when you think about the interconnectedness of ecosystems, and there are some elements in there that I think raise things for people that they may not have really been thinking about. That said, you know, even ones where it's like, oh come on guys, like I do get emails from people being like, I saw this documentary and it says mermaids exist, but my friends won't believe me. Will you please?
I remember how not only did that, it was the Discovery Channel documentary. Not only did that come out, but then the U.S., like the federal government, had to issue a very real like statement saying, we are not keeping mermaids in tanks. That was fake. That was not real. The Discovery Channel just did a movie.
Yeah. The thing about that is, okay, so it's easy to bash some of these things, but you could also see it as an opportunity, right? So like, if somebody gets interested in the ocean because they think mermaids might exist, right? I would very much caution people from going, just telling people like, you're stupid for having believed this documentary, right? It's like, instead, could we redirect? We could be like, that's really cool that you are excited about the idea of mermaids. Like, we do not have any evidence to support the idea of mermaids. However, there are some creatures in the ocean that are kind of like mermaids that you might find fascinating. Here's some links.
So for all the 12-year-old kiddos out there that might listen to this, in your professional opinion, mermaids are fake? Is that what you're saying? In your professional opinion, mermaids are are fake. Dr. Spence, is that correct? What I'm hearing is that you are saying in your professional, are you about to tell me that Santa Claus is also fake? Is that what you're saying here on the Head on Fire podcast?
I can neither confirm nor deny. But I would also say Google manatees.
You know, I do love, and I'm sure that the internet is just creating fake lore at this point, but I do love this kind of idea that, like, okay, if you combine the fact that for many, many, many thousands of years we had terrible eyesight and no way to fix that, and combine that with stuff like manatees and seals, and the fact that maybe as people were on boats and seeing things in the distance, maybe you got the idea for mermaids. I'm sure that's all just something that somebody made up, but I do love the idea that, like, I mean, yeah, that could probably explain it.
I mean, but you could also think too, like, we as humans, like, we're so much of us is actually water, right?
And, yeah.
And also there's really interesting relationships that humans have with the water and really cool things that we can do in the water. So it's like, there are things.
What can we do in the water?
Well, I mean, there are people who can swim quite well. I mean, it's not like we can't go into the ocean. True. We've also created technology to allow us to spend a lot of time underwater.
See, and here I thought you were about to tell me about a secret sect of humans that are secretly waterbenders. I'm a little disappointed.
I shouldn't have let that slip.
The real mermaids were the people, the friends we made along the way. Because we're 70% water. Something you said at the very beginning of this conversation about how sound travels faster through water immediately made me think of all of these sound-based superheroes and supervillains out there. People like Black Canary and Banshee and Elliot Page in the Umbrella Academy, just all of the sound-based. Would they just be absolutely terrifying underwater?
So it depends on, like, how adaptable your, like, sound-based skill is. So,
sure.
Like, okay, if you take a human and you go underwater, I think one of the things that makes people act like the sound is that the ocean isn't full of sound is because when we humans go underwater, our hearing changes. And so we actually experience hearing underwater as kind of quiet.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean that it actually is quiet down there. It's because of the way that we hear. And also, you'd have to be able to receive signals, you know, sound signals more quickly. And so it's like, if you could adapt to the different way that sound travels in water, like, great. But
no, but I'm just thinking about those, like, superheroes like Banshee or Black Canary that just, like, open their mouth and, like, the concussive force comes out, like, just those waves of concussive force. And I just think, well, if it travels even faster down there, it would, like,
it could be
Aquaman stand zero chance.
That could be pretty epic. That could be pretty epic.
I love all these hypotheticals.
Yeah. but dolphins, like, real example. I mean, they can see, like, into you with sound that they're pointing at you. I mean, it's like,
wait,
it's this really
in you? I knew that they did echolocation, but they can see inside of you?
Well, because it's not exactly like light, you know, it's like bouncing off, like, the surface of your skin, but, like, sound, you know, it's gonna, like, they can tell something about, like, the texture of materials, like, by the way that it's bouncing off. And so it's like, it's some crazy, that's
dolphins
some crazy
are
stuff.
Terrifying. Dolphins
they are terrifying.
Terrifying.
This is why I'm like, reality is, like, so strange and crazy and amazing. Like, we can just, if people are, like, wondering about stuff, like, tell them all the stuff that we know about, that we already know is,
like,
so
it, from everything that I know about, like, the big famous animals from the ocean, like, sharks are puppies and dolphins are serial killers.
that's not entirely wrong.
Like, Jaws really messed us up about our idea of sharks, because they are
sharks are pretty cool. Oh my gosh, whale sharks. I mean,
yes.
If anybody needs to, like, check out, like, a super amazing, cool shark that you want to be buddies with, like, whale shark is the one. They're so amazing. They are kind of scary because they're really big, but way cool. I mean, they're like a big polka-dotted giant fish. I mean...
Well, Dr. Heather Spence, this hour has absolutely swum by. It's absolutely, nice. It's just, it's rushed by in a wave of excitement. You wear so many hats. I know that we had so many topics to get through, and you just, thank you so much for going through all of them with me. I really appreciate your time and your expertise. If people would like to find out more about you, your music, your various projects online, where can they do that?
So I have a website, heatherspence.net. And so there's links from there. You can find my music on all major streaming platforms, Spotify, YouTube, etc. You can also, if you want to find out more about specifically about the ocean sound research on coral reefs, you can check out oceanworldofsound.com.
Well, Dr. Heather Spence, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. This is fun.
And that is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Dr. Heather Spence. If you like this show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider sharing it with your friends on social media. You could also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And while you're there, consider leaving a review. Reviews help recommend the show to other listeners just like you. If you hate the ads at the beginning and end of each episode, consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and fun little goodies along the way. Sign up at patreon.com/headonfirepod. And I will just say, please remember that with my Patreon, whether you can give $1 a month or $50 a month, everybody has access to all of the same awards, just because I understand that times are tough and I don't really feel like, limiting anything behind a paywall. I want people to feel free to give what they can give. Now, you might be asking yourself, hey, this doesn't sound like your normal end of show closing credits music. That's because this is one of Dr. Spence's songs from her album, Whale Hello There. This is track 4, Gulls Just Wanna Have Fun. And I'm going to close out the show by letting you all listen to the rest of the song. Please go get Dr. Spence's album, Whale Hello There, anywhere fine music is sold online. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for downloading the show. And please remember to never stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.